Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Seated at breakfast in Brussels today, President Trump blasted NATO allies before anyone had touched their orange juice. He once again accused most NATO nations of not paying enough for shared defense. They'd pledged to increase spending by 2024 in case they had to protect each other from Russia, which had seized Crimea. But Trump blasted Germany for supporting a new pipeline to import Russian gas.
Germany, as far as I'm concerned, is captive to Russia because it's getting so much of its energy from Russia. So we're supposed to protect Germany, but they're getting their energy from Russia. Explain that. And it can't be explained, you know.
Here in this country, Republicans are pushing for a fast confirmation of President Trump's Supreme Court nominee, Brett Kavanaugh, while Democrats try to sink that nomination. Let's bring in our political strategist. Joining us today, Angela Rye, Democratic strategist. Hi, Angela.
Hi, Jeremy. How are you?
Doing well. And Alice Stewart, a Republican strategist, is with us as well. Hi, Alice.
Hi, Jeremy. How are you?
I'm doing good. So let's start with NATO. Here's an exchange between the Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg and President Trump at a breakfast this morning. As Robin mentioned, they hadn't even touched their orange juice. They're talking about the alliance, the pipeline, and the threat from Russia. Here it is.
I think that two world wars and the Cold War thought us that we are stronger together than apart.
But how can you be together when a country is getting its energy from the person you want protection against or from the group that you want protection?
Because you understand that when we stand together, also when dealing with Russia, we are stronger. I think what we have seen is that...
No, you're just making Russia richer.
Alice, you're a strategist. Is there a strategy here to what Trump is doing? Is he trying to... criticize allies ahead of his meeting with Putin next week because he's sensitive to criticism that he's too close to Russia, or what?
I think we always assume there is some strategy with President Trump, and we hope that there is. But clearly this was more of the same, which he has done before. The breakfast certainly got off on a difficult footing, but he's been consistent with where he stood with NATO and wanting them to pay more for the defense spending. And evidently there was a secret brunch after that breakfast, and they made some progress, given that they have all agreed to bolster the NATO defense capabilities to counter Russian threat. So I think the optics of the breakfast and the audio we heard out of that was difficult and typical Trumpian style, but it sounds like they made some progress after the fact with the communique that came out of NATO.
I just want to stay with you for a second, Alice, before we get to you, Angela, because a cynic could say, Jeremy, that when he speaks of Russia that way, that might have been, you know, in Russia whispering in his ear, hey, how come they're beating us up so much when they want our, you know, want energy from us, when they're actually playing with us? But how does this play out, this idea of him saying that the allies aren't spending as much when they are spending more? Why is he doing that?
This is something he has always been consistent on, and specifically with NATO, in that saying that the U.S. is not NATO's piggy bank. And that is something he's been consistent on. And look, if you look at the numbers, the percentage of our GDP that we pay into NATO is higher than the others. But we do have confirmation from them that they are going to boost their contributions to NATO. So that is encouraging. But this is something he has just, it's always been something that he has been firm about. And for some reason, it really... it's something he doesn't want to let go by. Even when they're right in front of his face, it's something he wants to clear up. And it sounds as though he's making some progress.
Angela, your thoughts on what we're seeing today?
Well, I haven't made it my business to try to determine what a Trump strategy might be. And part of that is because it's woefully inconsistent. I think the one thing we can always expect from Donald Trump is the desire to and the strategy to consolidate power, even if that means eliminating power bases for us in other spaces. So over the last year and a half, Donald Trump has spoken about NATO in ways that are less than constructive, that tear at, at least the Western Hemisphere's cohesion and unity. And I think it's deeply frustrating as you watch every day this country falling apart. at it seems. So to go at it on a larger scale is just, I think, more maddening. Well, so I'm not making it my business to figure that out.
But his backers, Angela, might say it's working. You even saw the head of NATO
his
today.
His backers
well, hold on,
say
hold on.
That when...
Hold on one second, just one second, then you can jump. You know, this morning you heard the Secretary General say to Trump at Trump's prompting, and this is partly because of your leadership that the countries are paying more. You know, he said that to them, that it started last year and it, you know, had something to do with Trump's bellicose nature. So they can point to that and say, look, it's working. Hello?
I'm here. I just, again, so I don't make it my business to understand what Trump supporters say is working or not. What I think is the real problem is his tough talk is going to cost us in a great way, more than it already has. And at some point, we have to understand that even if he got the short-term goal accomplished today, let's say that he does. Mm. What does it cost us in the long term? And I think that is the problem with his rhetoric. That is the problem with his approach. That very bullied way of dealing with people, with dealing with the world leaders, is going to backfire as if it hasn't already. Mm. So,
Alice, let's move to the Supreme Court here. And you tweeted that Brett Kavanaugh is a solid choice for Supreme Court justice. Is that a lukewarm endorsement or a full-throated endorsement?
It's a full-throated endorsement. Look, he is solid in my view for a lot of reasons, but most importantly, and this goes if I was Republican or Democrat, he has made a commitment, and we heard this Monday evening, that his number one commitment is fidelity to the Constitution and serving as a justice with a view of the Constitution as written. And I think that from an American standpoint, you can't ask for anything more than that in a Supreme Court justice. And he's got a long record, and it will be a very thorough and very tough a Supreme Court nomination process. But I think the current situation we're in, he was the best of the best. We had a tremendous, tremendous list of people to choose from. And in my view, this was the number one reason I voted for Donald Trump. I worked for Ted Cruz, who I view someone that would be bring civility and a mature atmosphere to the White House. When he didn't work out, Donald Trump is my choice solely on the purpose of the Supreme Court nominees, and he has followed through on those promises. And I see Brett Kavanaugh as someone that will show fidelity to the Constitution above all else, and that is critical. Not just because it's not a short term thing; this could go on for many decades. So that's why I think he's a solid choice.
Well, Angela, take that up, because that is why a lot of people, we heard from evangelicals who held their nose and voted for Donald Trump for just this reason, to get this nominee in.
So, again, I think that this is, you know, just another point where we'll have to disagree. Brett Kavanaugh has demonstrated that he's very partisan. He's demonstrated that he will oppose voting rights. He supported a voter law that would suppress the vote of someone who was well into their 90s. He has demonstrated that he is not a fan of nor a supporter of laws that will advance civil rights in this country and make equity even tougher for communities of color after more than two centuries of oppression here. I think that that's deeply troubling, and it should come as no surprise to you that I adamantly oppose this justice. And I hope that Democrats, even in red states, will also do the same thing, because it's the right thing to do.
I was just going to ask you, what would you advise? You're a strategist. What would you advise them? How do they go about that when they're in those delicate situations? And yet here's a justice who's, you know, people feel will probably overturn not just Roe v. Wade, but health care. How do they go about that?
I think they go about it by remembering the fact that they're elected leaders. And that means you decided to run with a particular party. You decided to run on the backs of progressive people, on people who want to see this country move forward and not backward. We've seen it go back a great deal since this president has been elected. And they have to decide that they're going to stand up for what's right. We don't deserve to go beyond 1965, where voting rights was enacted, or 1964 with Civil Rights Act was enacted, or even the 1968, since it's 50 years later, the Fair Housing Act. We don't deserve to go backward. We must go forward. And so they have to stand on leadership and courage and be bold in this moment and do the right thing.
Just to follow up on that, the importance of this from a political standpoint is to encourage voters. Look, if you don't like this nominee, or this isn't someone that you think would be reflective of your views and values, get out there and vote and make sure you elect candidates on the local, state, and certainly the federal level that reflect your views and mm-hmm. values, because ultimately they will be the ones that are determining who these justices right. are at the Supreme Court, and it mm-hmm. makes a long-lasting impact.
Okay, just about a minute left here. Angela, let me go to you. There's a headline in today's Wall Street Journal that says, rising gas prices raise concerns for U.S. economy. People on average paying $2.96 a gallon now, much more where you're joining us from in California. Now, in 2012, Trump blamed President Obama for not stopping record high prices. Is he going to be blamed this time?
Who knows?
It doesn't sound very confident. Right.
No, I don't know. What I can tell you is I think that often we've seen this historically, that presidents are regularly blamed for rising gas prices, and many times they're outside of the scope of their control. I don't know what part of California you're talking about, but certainly in L.A., it's almost $4.
Right.
So it's,
yeah.
it's
right.
very high. But yeah, I think that doesn't lie in his lap. As much yeah. as I want to make that a political issue, I'm not going to blame the president, just like I wouldn't let folks do that to Barack Obama.
Of course, there are some who say, environmentalists in particular, it should be high, make it higher so that we stop driving. Angela Rye, Democratic strategist, Alice Stewart, Republican strategist. Thanks, both of you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.